WEEI Afternoons. That was Brian Hoyer about a half hour ago with us here. And that's a story, Ted, that I actually, like Brian, haven't really verified, but it's making the rounds. It's becoming legend of Drake May.
I love it.
That he looked at the stat sheet in high school, not to see what he was doing, to see who didn't get theirs, basically, and who he needed to spread the ball to. You like that story?
I love that story. Because what is it? It's very similar to how the head coach thinks. Mm-hmm. You know, guys been working all season long to try and get some playing time. They got opportunities. We wanted to reward them. You know, I think Vrabel is very much about guys getting their rewards and spreading the wealth around. So I think the two think similarly when it comes to that, which I absolutely love. And just the juxtaposition between Drake May's final game of the season versus Matt Stafford's final game of the season, where they were trying to get him touchdown passes,
right,
where Drake May was handing the ball off at the one-yard line for somebody else to get the touchdown. I like, you know, it's kind of like the Brady-Peyton Manning debate where, you know, Peyton wanted all the money. Tom wanted to do what was right for the team. I was into that then.
Yep.
I'm still into that stuff now. Yeah. I like that. Those kind of, you know, stories that kind of pit you against someone else. It feels like our guy's doing it for the right reasons.
And you know what makes it work? 14 wins. Because if you were like 6-8 Fitzy or whatever, 6-9 whatever, and word got out that they were trying to get a guy a catch or they were trying to get this guy. How about you try to win football games and don't worry about individual stats?
But that part of me is like, you know, the touchdown, everyone references the touchdowns. It's like Drake May could have gotten more touchdown passes if that's what they were trying to do, was get him MVP.
Yep.
But no, he's trying to win football games and to distribute the ball equally so that everyone's involved. I love that story from high school. It's no surprise. I'm surprised we didn't hear more of that when he got drafted.
Yeah.
That story.
I hope it's true. If not, who cares? You know what? I think this world would be better off, actually, if not everything had to be true. Like in sports, like 80 years ago, the newspaper guys controlled everything, and they would make up these stories and legends would be built because you didn't have phones and internet and all this, right?
It's just scary with AI, though, with all the stuff they can come up with. It's
true. I know. I just saw Jordan running for touchdowns on football
field. In high heels.
I'm not sure the guy who talks into a microphone for a living should advocate for things being false more often.
Not false?
Let's just make it up.
No. Did you guys read the, what's his name, Jeff Perlman, that wrote the Bo Jackson?
He's a tremendous author, yes.
And the title was something to like the last sports legend, or basically that Bo was the last guy where kind of word-of-mouth stories were part of his legend, right? Oh, in BP one day at the Metrodome, he went up left-handed, and he hit a ball off the roof in the back. Now you would go, okay, show me. Everybody's got a phone. Show me it. But, like, back then, you could just believe it.
Have you ever met Bo Jackson?
I haven't. If you make that happen, you will be my favorite. We got to meet him
someday.
I don't know that I could compose myself.
Yeah.
I might cry.
Yeah, I think you might.
I don't think you people understand. Yeah. That was in the formative years of my life.
The infatuation you have, and I get it.
I get it.
He was the man.
He was pretty awesome.
What is one of those legend stories? Do you remember the Herschel Walker legend story? How did he work out?
The push-ups and sit-ups?
Push-ups and pull-ups. Like that was all he did.
Ballet.
Yeah. And ballet. And that's all he needed to be the player he was.
Get a little dubious.
He was absolutely shredded.
Yeah, he was.
He'd have that little thing in his locker. The P-man wants to see you tomorrow morning. All you do is push-ups and you look like that? Sure you do. Yep.
So, Andy, you cried for Patriots and Bears in the 80s and not again until you meet Bo Jackson.
That is not okay. I cried giving my vows at my wedding. Anyway, Ted's here. It's a little after 4. Why don't we talk a little Dolphins-Patriots?
It's time for a TED Talk.
In a pothole that time in the form of Ted Johnson.
This was a disappointing play. Patriots had momentum.
From three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson.
This guy is one of the best inside linebackers in football.
It's like playing hide-and-go-seek with the football. The snap of the ball, said hey.
On WEEI Afternoons.
Ted, before we get into the points you have in the official TED Talk and everything, what was your just like big picture takeaway from 38-10, the finale? We just talked about they got some guys some incentives. They did, like, just the over, they got Will Campbell back and some of that. Like, what was just your sort of overall kind of takeaway from that finale and what they did?
I loved it. I thought, you know, look, it was a little bit close there, but I never, it just rarely, even And some of these games against lesser opponents, even if the game was tight, I've never felt like the game was ever, you know, slipping away,
right,
even if it was a one-score game. And it was up until the middle of the third quarter.
Yep.
I love how they've responded kind of these last two games. I feel like, you know, Hoyer kind of hit on it. These last two games were kind of tune-up games, you know, for this team. And if you look at it, the most yards the Patriots have had so far this year, okay, in offense, the third most yards they've had in a game was the Week 17 game against the Jets, 440. The second most yards they had on offense was in Week 16 against the Ravens at 453. The most yards the offense has had all season long, Week 18 versus the Miami Dolphins. Mm. So the offense is hitting on every cylinder right now at the right time.
A little bit of momentum. Stiz, hit it.
Well, I would say not disappointing at all. I think that these are allegations, like you mentioned in your question. It's things that we have to handle, and every day that there's distractions, some are smaller than others. You know, I'm confident that, you know, we'll focus on the Dolphins, and, you know, those two individuals that you mentioned will, you know, be able to handle the ongoing legal process.
Ted, while Dan Ball was manning the ship here, we had a couple off-field issues.
Yeah.
Stephon Diggs, Christian Barmore, court appearances. Did that affect the team last week or on Sunday?
Not one bit. And that was going to be something I was going to watch for. How did they start this game? Were they focused? Were these going to be distractions? Never not once did it even enter my mind, those stories, when they were playing the Dolphins. And that's a credit to Mike and the culture he's built. And I kind of thought it would be that way, just based on everything I've seen this year. I really wasn't worried about it. Those stories, hitting back-to-back like they did, I'm not sure every team would have responded the way the Patriots did.
So we don't overrate that. Like, we don't overrate, okay, Stephon Diggs actually sits 50 feet from me in the locker room. You know, I'm a safety. He's a wide receiver. I actually don't even really interact with him all that much, but he's got a court appearance, and now Cardi B's in the news. Like, is that a big deal? Is that a distraction? Does that have a potential effect?
It can.
On every player?
It can impact, especially if the guy that is being accused is not focused during the week, or he's missing, or there's where it impacts other guys, for him physically not being there. So, but these guys were able to, I guess Barmore, he missed one practice, I think, but otherwise it felt like business as usual. And I'm going to be honest with you, these guys are kind of used to having stories like this prop up. You play football long enough, you know, it's hard. All these guys on these teams, to everybody do all the right things all the time, that would be unusual. So guys are kind of used to these things interrupting and maybe potentially being out there while they're playing football. And so they're used to kind of not letting it bother them.
And Fitzy, that was your point yesterday with that clip we just heard from Vrabel that some people bristled at, not disappointed. How could you not be disappointed? Yep. And Fitzy, you were talking about, well, he's been around football a long time. He's probably seen a lot of these incidents.
Doesn't make it okay. It's just that he has a different and unique perspective and understanding of it because he's seen what some of these guys go through, who these guys are, what they do. So he has to manage it. But I did want to ask you, Ted, in this particular case where you have an allegation that was acknowledged a long time ago, but the charges didn't come forward until conveniently on New Year's Eve, cascading off of the charges or allegations of another player, whose responsibility is it to say something in the locker room, or do you just walk past it, leave it be a moot point?
Oh gosh, nobody says you know guys have their issues, you let them have their issues. You don't intervene, you don't talk, you just no, that's his deal. And you know what, Mike responding the way I did, I heard a lot of the commentary, and people were a little bit, you know, disappointed by his disappointed comments. And I would say, you know, there's a lot of people he's quote unquote responsible for, or, you know, basically has to speak for. It's not unusual that these things prop up, and you don't want these things to derail all the hard work that you've done. And so by him kind of maybe feeling like he did, you know, some people say dismissive of it or not giving it the weight it deserves, that's how you survive in this league, is moving on. You can't let things like bad decisions from your players impact the entire season and everyone else on the team.
I just wanted to say, though, Ted, and I was one of those people who hit up the group and was like, wow, not disappointed. I just felt like it was a poor choice of words and probably would have been better off saying something like, listen, it's not ideal, but we have to focus on X, Y, Z.
And I bet you if he had to do it all over again, he might put it that way, and I understand why you'd feel that way, Stiz.
Putting a couple things on tape on this drive for the playoffs.
Throw it to him.
Give it to him. MVP case. Instead, Stevenson. Both running backs with a touchdown. Two drives, two scores for New England.
Best player on the Patriots over the last 3 weeks, Ramondre Stevenson, Ted.
Was that the rushing touchdown? That was the rushing touchdown. So, Stevenson, how about this? Was one of the absolute worst running backs in the NFL for the first basically 14 weeks of the season, and then in the last four games, okay, he's ranked first in yards per rush at 9.6. So in the last 4 weeks, not just the last game, I'm talking the last four games.
Last month, okay.
He was literally bottom five in the NFL for the first 14 weeks, the last 4 weeks, number one in rushing yards per attempt. Number one in yak yards per rush at 7.3, fifth in receiving yards, first in touchdowns with six, and a PFF grade of 91.4, first in as far as running backs in the last 4 weeks. You talk about a guy who has turned it around. And Phil Perry asked me last night on the breakdown why I thought that was maybe the case. What has changed? I think he's not only is he obviously healthier. I think he's got. It was a little bit mentally affected by the fumbles early in the season. And then Phil Perry, I got to give him full credit for this, brought up, I think, is probably the more poignant point, and that is when he's on the sidelines nursing his injury, he's watching Travion Henderson go off. Nothing is a bigger motivator than watching the guy you back up going out there and balling out. So don't underestimate the power of that, and that maybe being responsible for his kind of resurgence here in the last four games.
I just call that the Garoppolo effect.
There you go. That's
I just want to reiterate the numbers you just gave and make correct me if I misheard you. You said in the last month he is averaging over 9 yards per carry, best in the NFL, and is also averaging over 7 yards after contact.
Correct. 7.3.
That's amazing.
That's amazing.
That's a huge. So you can say
that's
the
kind
line
of what he was known for when he first got in the league.
Yes, that game. I'm going to go back to last year, that first game against the Bengals when he had like a buck 23 and 121 was after contact or something like that. And he is reminding people how good he is and the talents he has. He can run, he can catch, he can protect. He makes the offense better by a mile when he's playing well.
And just so here's the little stat I was trying to search for, but he ranked 56th out of 60 running backs over the first 14 weeks.
Now he's the best running back in the NFL.
Third and two, Mays got Stevenson, touchdown. First touchdown pass of the day for Drake May. And Ramondre Stevenson for the second week in a row has two, one in the ground and one through the air.
So
is that my buddy doing his job?
Dude, it is a masterclass right now. So what was the main issue for this Patriots offense? What were we all concerned about? What part of the game that they weren't doing very good in?
The red zone. Yes.
Have you seen the last 2 weeks how they've been playing in the red zone?
Yes.
Okay. Masterclass, and it's basically they're running the football better, but they're also Josh is scheming up.
It was a wildcat. Or whatever you want to call that.
There was a wildcat, but the touchdown pass to Stevenson was kind of like the, the DeMario Diggs touchdown versus the Falcons or the Ramondre Stevenson touchdown versus the Jets, where he studies the opponent, knows what they're going to be in. So basically, that touchdown pass to Ramondre Stevenson, they went into empty. They motioned out to empty. The Dolphins checked and went into played a defense that Josh knew was going to be what they were going to be in, and so Ramondre ran the route, and it was an easy touchdown, and that was I think a play in which Drake May, you've seen him do this a lot lately, looks over to the sideline after the touchdown and he points right at Josh.
Yep,
and he points, he just boom, just a little point. That's him saying to Josh, you said in practice all week that when we get this look, they're going to do this, and this is what's going to happen. And we do it in the game, and it happens just the way you said it was going to happen in practice. So I'm giving you a little finger to say, boom, you're right. You're seeing him point to Josh a lot lately.
Can I add a layer to that? I know you love some of my conspiracy theories. I don't think you're going to love this one. That could also be him pointing out to everybody who's watching, maybe an owner who's up in a luxury box, maybe the head coach who for a couple weeks were like, does the head coach not really like the offensive coordinator? I feel like he's pointing and saying, that guy's really good. He makes me really good. Don't ever let that guy go anywhere. Give him the money he needs. When the Raiders contract runs out, pay him the money he's worth. Mike Vrabel, keep that guy on the sideline. I may be reading too much into it, but I choose to read it that way, Ted Johnson.
I like that.
Oh, you do?
I do. I love your conspiracy theories. Okay. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Under a minute and a half, Hughes is in trouble, chased by Barmore and sacked. Christian Barmore from an interior spot leads the team in pressures and turns this one into his second sack.
I mentioned you got Will Campbell back on the offense, and the run game looked good. The offense looked good. Defensively, you got Milton Williams back after this extended absence. And literally on one play, looked like he was shot out of a cannon.
Yeah, yep. They didn't block him, but still.
Details.
He looked good. But the running game, the running defense looked better, no surprise, right? And then also, they got after the passer, four sacks. I mean, they haven't had that many sacks in a very long time. And so I'm guessing a big part of it is because Milton Williams is back. I just think when Milton's back, I don't think Barmore likes being the top dog. I think he's better as a, what would you say, not the lead actor, Fitzy, but the supporting actor. I think he's more of a supporting actor than he is a lead actor. And so everybody's kind of, their roles fall into a better slot. I think that's overall better for the defense. I don't think Milton Williams coming back is all of a sudden their run defensive issues are taken care of. But it certainly helps. And we saw that in this game. And they got after the passer. They're going to need to get off after, Justin Herbert, because that they've given up 56 sacks, the Chargers have. Mm-hmm. 56. Ooh. And so it's time to get after the passer. And hopefully the performance they had last week against the Dolphins will that momentum will carry into this week's game.
Yeah, I don't want to put all my thoughts on the table on a Tuesday. We got a long week to build up. But I think Milton Williams, that defensive front, is the key to this game. If they are good, I won't even say great, but if they're good, slow down the run. Don't let Hampton and company run all over you with that big old fullback they're going to run at you. And then put enough pressure. You don't have to be the Texans. I don't expect you to be something you're not, but put just enough pressure on Herbert. If you play well up front, I think you win this football game. I think that's the key. Now, if you don't, then we might be having conversations in the shootout that Brian Hoyer's predicting might shoot out in a different direction. But Milton Williams is proving that $100 million, that was money well spent.
It was. And let me make one little final point here in the TED Talk here is the running game has also been aided. The reason the Patriots have been running the ball better is really because of Drake May's passing. So here's what I'm trying to say. When we play, for instance, we play Peyton Manning, the way you would stop Peyton Manning is by stopping Edgerrin James. What do I mean? So to stop Peyton Manning's passing attack, you put two safeties deep. So if you're going to play two safeties deep, that means you better stop Edgerrin James running the football with just seven guys in the box. All right? And we were able to do that. Teams only are having lighter boxes against Drake because he's been killing them deep. So teams are playing the Patriots now and Drake May with two safeties deep. Now the running game's getting going because they're lighter box. They were seeing loaded boxes to start the season. They're seeing less of them now because of the threat down the field with Drake. So now Ramondre and Henderson are getting theirs on the ground.
Yes, Dan Ball?
If I don't have Ted Johnson as one of my linebackers, what do I do then?
You know what? You just pretty much just Katie bar the door. It's over. You got no chance.
All right, Ted, thank you for inviting us to your TED Talk. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we're going to take a bigger picture look at what the Patriots have done in 2025 to get to 14 wins. What are they good at? What are they really good at? What is maybe a little fraudulent, looks good on paper, maybe isn't as good as it is? What is sustainable as they get embarked on this postseason run here? Bigger picture look at the Patriots and how good they are, or maybe how good they aren't, next here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball, give me what's trending.